You could be anywhere doing anything, but you're hanging out with us. We appreciate that. So wherever you're listening and however you're listening, we appreciate you guys for listening. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting episode of the Game Plan Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, that's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's T as in Tom, S as in Sarah, M as in Margaret. Kennedy Miller.
Yes, sir.
Where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at _KennedyMiller_. Again, that's _Kennedy, as in the former North Carolina basketball player Kennedy Meeks. Miller, as in the NBA Hall of Famer Reggie Miller. _KennedyMiller_.
All right. Aaron, my man, where can they find you on Twitter?
Yes, sir. You can find me on Twitter at SlendermanZ00. Again, that is SlendermanZ00.
All right. A lot to get to in today's show. Good to have the whole squad back together. So on the last episode of the show, Tyler Lennon and I spent about 25 minutes asking ourselves, why is it so difficult for black coaches in the NFL to get opportunities, number one? Number two, to get good, solid opportunities where teams are not actively trying to lose? And a part of me thinks Brian Flores heard us on this show and decided, you know what? I've been asking myself the same damn question. And he decided to sue the NFL for it. So, Ken, Aaron, what are your thoughts about Brian Flores' lawsuit against the NFL?
I love what he's doing. You know, I saw the screenshots between him and Bill Belichick, and it was like, I really felt bad once I read it. Like, you know, Bill is like, congrats on the job, because clearly it's a miscommunication between Brian Flores and he thinks he's talking to Brian Dable. So he's like, congrats on the job. And Brian Flores is like, man, you think I got a chance, Bill? Like, I'm excited about it. He's like, yeah, I heard that you got it. And so, you know, Brian Flores is like, thank you so much for everything, Bill. Thank you. And then you can kind of like, he texted again. He was like, Coach, are you talking about Brian Flores, myself, or Brian Dable? And Bill Belichick takes back, oh, my apologies. I meant Brian Dable. I'm so sorry. And it's like, man, I ain't even got on the interview yet. It's like, what are we doing? And you can tell, like, a guy like Eric Bieniemy, who still has not gotten a job, who's included in the lawsuit. I want to say he's interviewed 20 times for a head coaching spot. Or something like they put in the lawsuits interview around that many times. And because he quote unquote doesn't interview well, he keeps getting passed up on these jobs. And I feel like we just kind of touched on a little bit earlier with the Texans getting, Lovie Smith as a head coach. That's like the second time that a minority job has went to another minority. It's like the second time in NFL history ever. The first time was Tony Dungy. They actually respected him so much in the Colts organization that they let him handpick his successor. Who he picked was Jim Caldwell. And so, like, I feel like they're just doing this because they can include that in the lawsuit. Like, you know, here we just went from a minority to another minority because a week ago or 2 weeks ago, the Texans seem like they're closing in on hiring Josh McCown, who's had more head coaching interviews than he actually has games that he's coached. He's a high school coach. And they knew that if they did that, it would be a terrible look for the league in general. So, like, I mean, I'm not upset at the Lovie Smith hire. I think the Texans could have got somebody more qualified, but I mean, Lovie has had some success in this league, so I'm not totally upset at it. But I mean, back to Brian Flores, I love what he's doing. I love that, you know, he's outspoken in it. And like I said, he's not just talking about himself. He's talking about other black coaches that have been qualified for these positions that keep getting passed up over and over.
Aaron?
I also am very, very happy to see what Flores is doing, because it is an act of bravery, for one. We all know maybe not so much for Brian Flores, because he is that good, that qualified. He may have a good chance of still getting a coaching job in the NFL, but the chances went from very, very high to very, very low. Like, they drastically dropped with this lawsuit. It just would look bad if you blackballed the guy that called you out on your own nonsense. Then again, I wouldn't put it past the NFL, but hey, but definitely an act of bravery because he knows that you're not going to get everything done with this lawsuit. Let's be real. You're not going to get everything done. You're not going to change the hearts and minds of these owners and general managers from 80 years ago. But he does know that by filing this lawsuit, that you force the NFL into action. It's all about the public opinion. I won't say all about the public opinion, but the public opinion is very, very critical to what his plan is with this lawsuit. Because once you bring these types of things into the public eye, especially in 2022, especially a year after the NFL starts adding decals to the back of helmets for Stop Racism This and Black Lives Matter That, but you can't manage to find a black coach in a dominantly black league, it doesn't make any sense. So Brian Flores is just calling attention to that. And now there's going to be not a major shift, but you're going to see the ball get rolling. You're going to see more people of color in more positions, which was already starting to happen, but not as fast as it needs to be happening. With the amount of players of color that we have in the NFL, there has to be representatives. For as long as the NFL has been around, there has to be representatives, either former players or former students of the game, who are qualified, who are more qualified than a guy like Josh McCown, a high school football coach. How long has he been a high school football coach? Like, I would put money under 5 years, didn't coach a day in college, didn't coach a day in the NFL, but had head coaching interviews over people like Bieniemy. That just doesn't make any sense. So this is clearly a problem with what they're doing. This isn't a he say, she say type of deal. This is a clear problem that everybody sees, but nobody can do anything about, except now that's about to change. So.
And one more thing, Alex, and then like you can give your take, but I love that he's bringing awareness to, I don't even want to confirm it, but the alleged incidents of, you know, them basically trying to put him in a lose-lose situation. They want him to lose games on purpose. They're willing to pay him $100,000 per game that he loses in order to get, you know, a good draft pick. But then when you fire the guy, then you cite that he's not winning enough games. So you're really putting the guy in a lose-lose situation, which is kind of why, like, you hire a guy like Lovie Smith, even a guy before that they hired David Culley. I hate that the jobs that the black coaches do get are these rebuilding jobs that basically set them up for failure because they're not going to succeed in the first year. Brian Flores, how many games did he win that first year, Alex, with the Dolphins?
Five.
He won five games with a team that at the beginning of the year, if I'm not mistaken, traded three of their best, if not their best players. Kenny Stills, Laremy Tunsil, and Minkah Fitzpatrick. And he won five games with that group. And then what, he loses seven in a row and then wins seven in a row this year, right? And I'm just like, okay, so what do you want him to do with this roster? And now it kind of makes sense because you remember, I want to say it was last year when Tua was a rookie and they were winning these games with Ryan Fitzpatrick. And then all of a sudden they bench him. And everybody's like, why are you benching Ryan Fitzpatrick? He's playing well. The team's playing well. And then you put in Tua. For what? You always, like, they never get these jobs. And I'm using an NBA example. Like, Steve Nash ain't never coached in his life, but gets an opportunity to coach Kevin Durant and Kyrie as his first head coaching job.
Look how that turned out.
You know, and it's not turning out well, but at least he has the opportunity to coach two Hall of Famers off the bat. Steve Kerr, never coached a day in his life, was a general manager, which is a little different, but gets an opportunity to coach Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. And so we don't get those first jobs. You know, you get Steven Silas down in Houston, who got what he thought signed up for was James Harden and Russell Westbrook, which turns out to be Jalen Green and Kevin Porter, which is a nice young core, but are you going to let him build with that core? You know what I'm saying? And so That's my problem with it.
I don't want to be the person to come on here and bust people's bubbles on a few things, but I feel like I have to do that. So, the first thing I thought about when I read that Brian Flores sued the NFL was that, number one, it is going to be a very, very, very difficult thing, like legal, on a legal standard, to prove discrimination. Like, the Supreme Court has made it as such to where if you're going to sue somebody for employment-based discrimination or discrimination based on any sort of protected status, effectively, the person has to say, I engage in this action and I'm doing that from a place of racial bias or with an intention to deprive someone of an employment opportunity because of their race or their protected status, their sexual orientation or, you know, gender, things like that. If it's not that, essentially the plaintiffs get the benefit of the doubt. So that's the first thing there. Do I believe Brian Flores? Absolutely, I do. So there's that. But there are two issues here. And one of them is that in this country, we do not, by we, I mean America. America does not assume that black people are capable. America does not assume black people are intelligent. America does not assume black people should be in places of authority. Here's what I mean when I say that. They always mention, well, when it comes to Byron Leftwich or Eric Bieniemy, well, they've just got Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady, and it's really just Andy Reid and Bruce Arians doing everything, right? You've never heard that mentioned as a reason, as a demerit against Adam Gase, Josh McDaniels, Doug Peterson, Matt Nagy, any of those other sorts of guys, Bill O'Brien, the list goes on and on and on. And the reason that is because there's this inherent assumption that white men are capable. There's this inherent assumption that white men are intelligent. There's this inherent assumption that that white man is adding something to that great player, right? And on the other end of that spectrum, there's the assumption that Eric Bieniemy and Byron Leftwich and other black coaches, they're just riding the coattails because there's no way a black guy could possibly be capable enough to assist in someone's greatness, to elevate someone's greatness, right? So there's the first point. And secondly, we always in this country assume whiteness as authority. Whiteness is inherently expected to be in places of authority. And I got a brief story to help crystallize this. So last summer, it was my second day of teaching in person. So I was teaching my American government course. And one of my buddies, he came to class with me, one of my classmates. And my classmate, he's white. He's about 5 or 6 years older than I am. And he's got on shorts, a t-shirt, and some basketball shorts. You know, it looks like he's about to go work out. And I've got on a shirt, a tie, some slacks, some hard bottom shoes, like I'm about to go to church or something. A student walks up and asks him, says, excuse me, professor, I have a question. And I'm standing right next to him. But they asked him, excuse me, professor, I have a question. And she was black. Right?
Peace.
And so basically what I'm saying is, in every facet of American society, we don't ever assume black people are in authority. We don't ever assume black people should be in authority. So that's the part of this to where I think we have to get into the, like, you know, the whole it takes all of us and all that bullshit. All that sounds cute and everything like that, but there are inherent structural issues there, and it's more than just, you know, we need a pipeline or, you know, there needs to be more mentoring of black coaches. No, there are inherent things in the equation in this country to where we assume black people shouldn't be in these sorts of positions. And to speak to Aaron's point that this might help get more black coaches jobs, hopefully Brian Flores will get another job. I'm here to tell you right now, Brian Flores' career as an NFL head coach is over without a shadow of a doubt. Because there's one thing I know in this country is that white people do not like to be made uncomfortable. White folks pass laws to ban talking about certain things in schools. When white folks get uncomfortable, they run away. White folks do not embrace the uncomfortability. They're almost like the fat kid that goes to the gym. That's like, I'm gonna get in shape. And they go to the gym for like a week or two. And then once it really starts to burn, they stop. Once it really starts to get tough, they stop. That's white folks. And his career is over. Like, he set fire to his career. And I'm not saying that it is his fault that his career is over. That's the fault of the white folks in power. But we've seen this with Mohamed Abdul-Rauf in the NBA, Colin Kaepernick. You know, Colin Kaepernick was another guy. The moment he actually said why he kneeled for the national anthem, oh, this is over. It's a wrap on this. I hope he's taking care of his money. He's torpedoed his own career to stand up for what's right. And that's admirable. And to touch on Kennedy's point about Stephen Ross and that they were willing to, Brian Flores' allegation that the team was willing to pay him $100,000 off the books per loss. They need to take Stephen Ross's team from him. They took Jerry Richardson's team because Jerry Richardson had fostered a sexist and a hostile work environment. It's like, yo, no, Stephen Ross is threatening the integrity of the game fundamentally.
Yep.
So there's the big issue there. And Ken, you mentioned, and me and Tyler talked about this on the previous episode of the podcast, that to your point, you've never seen a black coach get handed keys to a Cadillac, right? They hand a black coach a rundown 2001 Honda Civic with a rag in the gas tank and two tires that are half empty. Like, yeah, go drive. You can drive this one. And the thing was, not only did the Dolphins give Brian Flores a raggedy car to drive, they wanted Brian Flores to crash, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the fundamental thing. And knowing that with black coaches rarely get opportunities to be in positions of authority in the NFL. Like, they had to make a whole damn rule for black coaches to even get interviews, right? So, and if it doesn't work for that black coach at that job, it's very difficult for them to get another similar opportunity. Stephen Ross hired Brian Flores to lose, knowing that he was going to fire Brian Flores for losing, and then it was going to be terribly difficult for Brian Flores to ever become a coordinator or a head coach ever again. And this is before we even get to all of the stuff regarding the Denver Broncos and John Elway and the team brass showing up drunk and late for the interview. That's before we get to all of that. Stephen Ross knew he was asking Brian Flores when he walked in the door to sacrifice his career, to lose games. So I know I kind of went all over the place there, but that's where I'm at right now.
And to your point, the person that he named in the lawsuit, again, those screenshot text was Bill Belichick. Now, before this came out, Brian Flores was being linked to being the new Texans head coach. He was one of the front runners for the job. This comes out, he's no longer talked about. Who runs the Texans? And where did they come from?
Are you talking about that youth pastor?
Yes. And where did he come from? He came from the New England Patriots. So it's a lot of Bill Belichick. Your point is totally right. And I'm just adding on to that. Bill Belichick holds a lot of cachet in the league where you go against him and it's basically like a death sentence. You know what I mean? Like, I agree with you. I would not be surprised if he don't have another NFL coaching job, NFL coaching interview. If I'm him, I would just try and find a nice college job and just go with that.
This will never see open court, in my opinion. Because the one thing the NFL does not want in a situation like this is deposition. They do not want deposition at all. They do not want discovery at all. So I think this will get settled long before this ever really starts working its way through the court system in about like a year or so.
Like you said, I hope he saved his money. You're really just hanging up the clipboard and hanging up the headset. But I think it was a necessary thing to do. If not for anything, like Aaron said, just for the awareness to bring attention to what's really going on. And
I don't think at this point there's an issue of awareness because white folks know what they're doing. You know what I mean? We know what they're doing. The whole thing is, are they going to stop? You know what I mean? So, like, anytime I always hear people ask the question, somebody asked me this question, what do we need to do? I said, what do you mean we? And can you always hear me say this all the time? What you mean we? Black folks, it's like, we just asked you to stop being racist. They ain't no we. We've been trying to get you to stop being racist for a long time. Like, in order to get things done, white folks are the ones who have to do it. Like in the 1950s and the 1960s, like, hey, can you please give black people voting rights and give black people full citizenship so this thing can finally be a full democracy? For the longest time, white folks fought, right? When did it finally happen? Not when black folks stopped fighting. White folks are like, all right, cool. Here you go. It ain't about us. It's about them.
Right.
Let me stop before I start preaching. Let me stop. We're going to leave it right there, but we will be right back with more of the Game Plan Podcast on the other side of the break. Coming up next, we are going to pick the winner of the Super Bowl, Bengals Rams. We'll tell you who we got on the other side of the break. This is the Game Plan Podcast. Don't go anywhere. All right, so the Super Bowl is upon us. The Rams, the Bengals have had a hot run, got all the way from the wild card, as have the Rams. So, Ken, who do you have winning this game and why?
I got the Rams. And as much as, you know, I love the story of Joe Burrow, I mean, first of all, I don't think anybody really, really predicted that this was going to be the Super Bowl matchup. I think the Rams are going to win simply because I think they're just going to dominate the trenches. I think you look at a team like when Cincinnati played Tennessee in the first round, Joe Burrow was sacked 9 times. And they're a bottom half team in terms of pass protection and giving up sacks. And I think when you play a team like the Los Angeles Rams with Aaron Donald, who many consider to be the best defensive player in the NFL, Von Miller, Leonard Floyd, it's a recipe for disaster. And I think that Tennessee was able to get that pressure. They just weren't able to close the deal. And I think the Rams, who are, I want to say, third in the NFL in sacks, if they're able to get home with that much success, it's going to be very tough on Joe Burrow in that game. And, you know, I like Joe Burrow a lot. And also Matt Stafford showed me a lot, because I don't know if you remember at the beginning of the playoffs or right before the playoffs, I said I didn't believe in Matt Stafford. And he's proven me wrong. He's proven me wrong. Matt Stafford has made some big plays. Obviously, now that he has some talent, he's won some playoff games. And so I think the Rams are going to take this. I think the Rams are going to win this game. I think it's going to be probably like a 7-10 point win. But I think the Rams are going to win.
Aaron?
The logical answer would be the Rams. Of course, they have their star studded. That's the star power on that team is ridiculous. I mean, if you really put it on paper, we're looking at Matt Stafford, Cooper Kupp, Odell Beckham, Cam Akers, if he hadn't have gotten hurt, would have made a name for a bigger name for himself. And that's just on the offensive side of the ball, not to mention guys like Higbee. And then on defense, you've got what? Miller, Donald, Ramsey. That's unfair. So I can definitely see how they made the Super Bowl. The Rams did a lot of spending to get there, and it paid off. But Joe Burrow, man, he's one of those guys that he makes magic happen. It's kind of like Kennedy said, if Aaron Donald and the defense does their thing that they normally do, it's going to be a long day for the Bengals. But it was a long day for the Bengals against Tennessee. It was a long day at first for the Bengals in the first half against Kansas City. And they pulled both of those out. And I mean, with Kansas City, their firepower is even, to me, even more than the Rams. So if they can withstand going down 21-3 to Kansas City and then hold them to 3 points the rest of the game. I mean, with 5:04 to go in the second quarter, the Chiefs scored 3 points from that point on. That's impressive. The Chiefs, that's impressive. Matthew Stafford he's good to give you an interception or two. We haven't seen him in this is the biggest game of his life. Who knows what he's going to come out and play like? And we've seen him at his worst this season. So I'm going to pick Joe Burrow and the Bengals. I'm going for the underdog here. And the main reason why is simply because the firepower with the Bengals, they seem to make it happen. When you need them to make a play, they make the play. They've done it throughout the playoffs. So I'm not going to bet against an avalanche like that. Joe Burrow and the Bengals, that offense, that's an avalanche coming for the NFL, and a lot of people aren't ready for it. So I'm going to go with the Bengals.
In the 2 weeks or so leading up to this game, I've been like thinking about what team can I compare this 2021 Bengals team to in terms of roster construction and things like that. And the team that comes to mind to me, there's two teams, is the 2015 Panthers with Cam Newton. And those 2015 Panthers with Cam Newton had a great quarterback. They really didn't have a good receiver, but they had bums on the offensive line. And they were able to make that work with the Patrick offensive line and really not a whole lot of skill talent. I believe their number one receiver was Ted Ginn. Ted Ginn was the man for them. Because that was your Kelvin Benjamin was out with that ACL injury from training camp. And it all was fine until they went into that Super Bowl and they went up against the Broncos defense, which is probably one of the 3 or 4 greatest defenses of all time. And the chickens came home to roost. They couldn't keep Cam Newton upright. Cam Newton didn't even have time to think. And even last year's Kansas City Chiefs, same sort of issue. They had great skill talent on offense. Problem was, they couldn't block a soul. And they were able to make it work until they ran up against Tampa Bay in that front seven. I think a similar thing is going to happen in this game. Unless the Cincinnati Bengals drastically alter what they do offensively and get the ball out of Joe Burrow's hands on three-step drops, quick throws, quick screens, and things like that. But they've been calling a lot of these 5 and 7 step drops, knowing their offensive line cannot block a phone call. So calling 5 and 7 step drops and plays that take longer to develop down the field against the defense, and you don't have the offensive linemen, you don't have the manpower up front to block a Aaron Donald, to block a Leonard Floyd, to block a Von Miller, they're going to be in a world of trouble. Now, if Joe Burrow has time to throw, they can keep him upright and keep his jersey clean, maybe we're talking about a whole nother deal. Maybe. But I have no indication. I have no confidence that that Bengals offensive line is going to be able to keep Joe Burrow off the ground and give him time. I've got no indication of that. None. And like my daddy always used to say, football is about blocking and tackling. You know who's going to win the game by who blocked the best, it was able to move the ball, and who stopped the other team from moving the ball, who gave the other team's quarterback no time to breathe, no time to think. And ultimately, I think that's going to be the Rams.
I agree. I mean, I think it's going to be a good game, but I read a book a long time ago by the famous football coach by the name of Nick Saban. And the way that he said that he always started his teams was building in the trenches, because that's how you win games. Rams have that mold. I think, like Aaron said, they've spent a lot to get here as far as money and draft picks. And I think it is, you know, it's their time. And Joe Burrow is a really good young talent. And so is Ja'Marr Chase. And I think that the AFC is set up to be a great conference for the young quarterbacks for the near future. I just think that the Ravens are going to take it this year. And
you mean the Rams?
OBJ. Ravens. Rams.
I was going to say it.
I was talking about AFC quarterbacks. I was about to start naming them, and Lamar was the first one.
Yeah.
Rams. And so, yeah, I think OBJ and gets his first one, and Vaughn gets his second one, and, yeah, the stars are out.
I don't know, man. Joe Shiesty. And, you know, I will say this. This is the Super Bowl. So that terrible offensive line, depending on the coaching staff, the motivational staff, whatever you want to call it, that offensive line might – play like their lives are on the line. And if they do that, they might just buy like two extra seconds for Joe Burrow. Because yes, even though they would play like their lives are on the line, it still wouldn't be enough to stop Aaron Donald by himself. But with that being said, it buys Joe Burrow extra time, which Joe Burrow with extra time, that's dangerous in any aspect of the game. So there are a lot of factors that could come into play. You know, nerves, things of that nature. So, I would expect nerves to kick in for the team that's this first time there, but they don't seem to have nerves, that nerve problem. They seem to be expecting all these things that nobody else saw coming.
I mean,
like,
my fault. Go ahead. I was going to say, they got nothing to lose. Yeah. So, like, when you play with house money and nobody really expects you to get this far, like, it's like it's like getting into a fight with somebody that's not afraid to get punched in the face, right? Because no one expected the Bengals to be here. They're like, hey, man, the Rams are the ones are the team with the pressure, right? It's like being down.
The Rams have our team with something to lose.
Yeah, it's like being down 3-1 in the playoffs, right? Once you're down 3-1, everybody expects you to lose. So now you can just play free.
Yep. Yes, that's true. But here's the thing, though. They're not acting like, oh, man, we're just here. You know, I'm just happy to be here. We'll see what happens in the Super Bowl. They're like, oh, no, we're about to bust some ass. I don't know what y'all expect to happen, but we're about to go out there and beat the brakes off the Rams. Like, that's what we're here for. CJ Uzoma, Joe Burrow, they're on that type of time. They're not on some like, oh, yeah, you know, happy to be here, you know. Cool that we made it to the Super Bowl. We can build off this, yada, yada, yada. No, we're here in the playoffs from the divisional round or from the wild card round, excuse me. That's the energy they were on. When they beat the Raiders, they were like, dude, we're not satisfied with just a playoff win. Congratulations, Cincinnati. First playoff win in 30 years. Blase, blase. That's cool, but there's more coming. And they were right. and they've kept that same energy. And I just feel like you carry that type of momentum. You carry things like that into the Super Bowl. That's how you end up with an upset with the team. Usually, if you go back in time and you look at the teams that have upset in big games, they weren't coming into that game just happy to be there. They were expecting to win. And it just, the swagger that that whole team, not just Joe, everybody's giving Joe Burrow the swagger credit. That whole team oozes swagger. So you carry that type of momentum into the Super Bowl, you really never know what could happen.
I don't know, man. For me, it's just, I've always been taught to, you know, like the tangible things are the things you can like make predictions on, right? Yes. And my whole thing is I can't, given what I've seen, I have no expectation of the Bengals offensive line is going to, you know, somehow get motivated somehow, you know, maybe that happens. But the much more likely outcome is that they get their asses demolished by Aaron Donald, Leonard Floyd, and Von Miller. That's the more likely outcome, at least for the offensive line. I'm not saying the Bengals are going to get embarrassed. I mean, just in terms of the offensive line, that they're going to be completely overmatched.
Yeah, they are overmatched right now. It's not looking good for them. But, you know, I'm an optimist. You never know. I never can buy into for sure because every time I do, for me personally, it seems like whenever I buy into a sure thing, I turn out wrong. So always got to leave room for the unexpected. And this is a logical, air quotes, unexpected thing that could happen. Like, if the Bengals upset the Rams, it wouldn't be the biggest upset in history or anything like that. It wouldn't be the 2007 Giants beating the Patriots, you know? It would just be like, oh, the slightly better, or not slightly, but the, you know, moderately better team ended up not winning. It kind of would be just what it was. It'd be more important for the people who are on the team, like Joe Burrow, the second year guy who seems to win everywhere he goes, and Ja'Marr Chase, the rookie who has been, you can't even tell that he's a rookie. The way he's doing some of these secondary players, it's like he's been here for 5 years plus already. So, and those are just those two guys. I mean, Joe Mixon has had, this is not his best season. As a matter of fact, I think statistically, this is Joe Mixon's best season so far.
I believe so.
Like, everything is clicking for them. And it seems that once they get a beat on you, it's over. Once they adjusted at halftime, really prior to halftime, they got that stop on the goal line and they kind of figured out, okay, we're not going to run shell, but we're going to kind of contain them and bend but don't break. And it worked. They make the adjustments. Even with Ryan Tannehill, we're going to clog up the best players. We're going to crowd them and we're going to put a lot of pressure to force him to throw these thread the needle type passes. All those interceptions weren't just on the fault of Ryan Tannehill. They were getting tipped up in the air either by a drop from the player or the defense tipping the ball. I mean, like, what else can you really do if the guy doesn't catch it, or if a guy steps in and tips it 5 feet in the air right into the hands of Eli Apple or something, like, or Jesse Bates? You know, these guys make plays. Well, maybe not so much Eli Apple, but you get the idea. So, like I said, you never really know. And with this game, this isn't like the talent level isn't just drastically different. For the trenches, yes, it is. The D line versus the O line, that talent level is night and day. But everywhere else, the skill positions, special teams even, there's not that big of a difference, really. So, you know, I'm going to put my money on the Bengals, man. They seem to have a lot of momentum coming in. So,
all right, folks, we are out of time, unfortunately, here on the Game Plan Podcast. So, Kennedy Miller, my man, where can they find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter, _KennedyMiller_. Again, that's _KennedyMiller, as in the former NFL lineman Cortez Kennedy. Miller, as in the former NBA three-point marksman Mike Miller, _KennedyMiller_.
All right, Aaron, where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at SlendermanZ00. Again, that is SlendermanZ00.
All right, all right. You guys can find me on Twitter at AlexGoodwinTSM. Again, that's on Twitter at AlexGoodwinTSM. Again, that's T as in Thomas, S as in San Antonio, M as in Maryland. Wherever you're listening and however you're listening, we appreciate you guys for listening. For Kennedy Miller and Aaron Okonafu, Alex Goodwin is my name. This has been the Game Plan Podcast, and we will see you guys next time.